So we're going to talk about Samsara, Nirvana, and Buddha nature. That's the title of the talk.
Okay. Samsara refers to our situation of constantly recurring problems. Nirvana refers to the state of liberation that we want to attain. And Buddha nature is the purity of our mind and the potential that we have to become fully awakened Buddhists. So the title is taken from this book, Samsara, Nirvana, and Buddha Nature, which was written by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, and I assisted in it. And this is part of a series called The Library of Wisdom and Compassion that we're putting together. So this is volume 3.
But Samsara, Nirvana, and Buddha Nature is a very complicated topic to talk about in an hour. So I'm going to, instead of trying to cover the whole thing, I'm going to cover one aspect of what makes us revolve in samsara, in cyclic existence. Okay? So we usually talk about the three poisonous minds: ignorance, clinging attachment, and anger. And of those, I thought I would talk about anger and how to work with anger. So now you can all elbow your husband or wife and say, pay attention, you can use this tool. So, anger. I think we all know what that is from experience. But I want to give it a definition just to make sure that we all are on the same page. So, anger is a word I'm using to, in a very broad way, that includes a wide number of emotions. It goes from being furious and mad at somebody to irritated, annoyed, frustrated, enraged, belligerent, spiteful, hating. So all of those words are put under the term of anger because they all share the definition that I gave of anger, which is a mind that exaggerates the negative qualities of someone or something, and then can't stand to be around that person or object, and we want to damage it by either forcefully, doing something to hurt it, or damage it by refusing to engage with it. Okay? So anger is not the behavior. Anger is the mental emotion. And this is important because we can be angry and have very aggressive behavior, for example, going and punching someone in the nose. Or we can be angry and be very passive. Like when you're so angry you don't even want to talk to the person, so you just turn your back and walk away. Okay, so you see there's different behaviors that you can go with anger. In the same way, the opposite of anger, which is what we sometimes call patience or fortitude, an inner strength that can endure difficulties. Sometimes when we have patience or fortitude,
we may be very passive. We just see, okay, somebody did something obnoxious, but I'm really not going to bother about it. Okay. Or sometimes we can have patience and fortitude and speak or act very strongly, okay, with respect to somebody. So, for example, if your child, you have a little child, starts to go walk in the middle of the busy street with all the cars going by, you may not be angry at the child. You may have a peaceful mind, but are you just going to walk out there slowly and pick the child up and say, sweetheart, don't walk in the middle of the street. It's dangerous. Is that what you're going to do? No, you're going to go as fast as you can, hit that child up, go like this, look the child in the eye, and say, never walk in the middle of the road. You can get very hurt. Okay? So your mind may be calm, but your behavior may be very forceful in order to get the point across to the child. Okay? So remember, when we're talking about anger or fortitude, we're talking about the emotion inside, not the behavior. Okay? Now, does anger have any good qualities? Or is anger something that we should just abandon altogether? Now, some years ago, I was at a university in America, and speaking to the Department of Communications and Mediation and Conflict Resolution, and I said to the people there that anger doesn't have any good qualities and we should abandon it. They got so mad at me. Yeah? These people said, but anger does have good qualities. It lets us know when something is wrong. Well, yes, anger may let us know when something's wrong. But we don't have to be angry in order to know something is wrong. We can be intelligent and know something is wrong. Then they said, oh, but anger does have some good qualities, because if in a situation where a group is being oppressed or somebody is being taken advantage of or bullied, anger is good. You have to step in what do they call it? Moral outrage. Okay? And I said, maybe, but actually, compassion works better in those situations. Why? Because think about the definition I gave to anger. It's based on exaggerating the negative qualities of someone or something. So automatically, by that, we know it's not a realistic mind. We're exaggerating something in the situation and making it worse than it is, making it more serious than it is, making it more threatening than it is. And thus we get angry. So let me ask you this question. When you are angry, do you think clearly? Can you think clearly when you're angry?
No.
Yeah, we can't.
when we're enraged, the psychologists have a term for it. They call it a refractory period, which means that you're so into that emotion that you cannot take in any new information that may contradict what you're thinking and feeling. So when we're angry, our mind becomes very narrow. Yeah. All we're doing is we're looking at something or someone in the environment and putting all of the blame for our upset mind on that. That, or this person, is the cause of my suffering. Okay. Actually, that's exaggerated. It's not realistic. Because the anger comes from inside. We say, "You made me angry." But actually, nobody makes us angry. We make ourselves angry by exaggerating the harm. And because we have the seed of anger in our own mind, when we exaggerate the harm, then we get angry. And we get angry even when people haven't done anything deliberate to harm us. Okay? Let's flip that situation for a moment. It'll help you understand it better. Have you ever had someone come up to you and say, "I'm so mad at you because you did da 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 da," and you're going, "Yeah, I don't remember doing that." And the person says, "Well, you said D, 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 D." And you say, "Yeah, I did, but I wasn't insulting you. I wasn't harming you. I was just giving some information." Have you ever had that happen? Somebody gets mad at you, but you haven't done anything intentionally to harm them. We've all had that experience. Now let's flip it back. Have you ever gotten mad at somebody who hasn't done anything to harm you? Yeah, okay. Yeah. When we think about it, lots of times we misunderstand what someone says, or we misunderstand their body language, and we get very angry, but they had no intention to harm us. So that's showing how anger is exaggerated, and how anger is not perceiving the situation correctly. Because we can get mad even when nothing is going on. Or look at it this way. Yeah? Can you sit in your house? You're in your own home, you're comfortable, it's your day off, and you're relaxing. Then, all of a sudden, you think of what your brother or sister said to you 15 years ago. "My brother said, my sister said, what did they mean by that?" something wrong, when I didn't do anything. And this always happened in my family. Ever since we were little children, my brother and sister ganged up on me and bullied me. And it's not fair, and I am mad. Have you ever had something like that happen? You're in a very peaceful situation, then you remember something from the past. And before you know it, you're furious. Okay? Your brother and sister are not in the room with you. Nobody is accusing you of saying or doing something that you didn't say or do. You're in a peaceful environment, but your mind is full of rage. Did that person make you angry? They aren't even there. They may even have passed away, and we still get mad at them. Okay? So you see, when we say that person made me angry, it's really not a correct statement. Yeah. We make ourselves angry, especially when we remember a situation, exaggerate certain qualities, and then we ruminate on it. We think about it again and again and again and again. And then our peaceful mind becomes tormented with anger. And they didn't make us angry because they aren't even there. It's rather shocking, isn't it? How often we get angry when actually there's not much to get angry about. I had a friend who was pregnant. When you're expecting a baby, you're supposed to put on weight, right? If you don't put on weight, something's wrong. So, I was sitting in the room with my friend who's pregnant. She was going to go visit her sister in another state. And she was telling me that she's sure that when she gets off the plane, the first thing her sister is going to do is look at her and say, "You're getting pretty fat there. You've really put on weight." And as my friend was saying this to me, her whole body language changed because she started getting mad at just the thought of her sister telling her she was fat. Her sister was not in the room. Her sister had not even told her, said anything to her, and may never even tell her she's fat. But my friend was getting angry just at the thought of it. Okay? So you see how our mind works? Our mind can really deceive us. It can be very deceptive. And if we're not careful, then we can get in a lot of trouble by following that deceptive mind. Because then when we think somebody's blamed us for something we didn't do, we don't talk with them. We don't ask, "What am I perceiving the situation correctly? Did you really mean that?" We don't check out our perception. We just look at the person and say, "You said this, and you accused me of doing that, and I don't want a single bit. And then, what do they say? Do they say, oh yes, I'm very sorry, you're right. No, they don't say that. They say, what the are you talking about? I didn't say anything offensive to you. Why are you so sensitive? And then we have a fight. Huh? Because, then we reply to what they said. And since they said it in a little bit of a loud tone, we're going to say our response even louder. And in case they have a hearing problem. And then we're going to repeat it a few times in case they don't remember what we said. And then, are we happy when we get mad at somebody? Are we happy? Anybody happy here when they're angry? I don't think so. We're pretty miserable. So, anger is not our friend. Anger doesn't have any good qualities. It just makes us miserable. It makes us say and do things to other people that are hurtful. And we create a lot of negative karma, which will result in an unfortunate rebirth future. And the karma also obscures our mind, preventing us from gaining realizations of the path to awakening. Okay? So anger doesn't have any good qualities. But let's come back to this idea of moral outrage. You know, somebody, okay, in Myanmar, the Buddhists have slaughtered a lot of the Rohingya people, and a lot of the Rohingyas have had to flee into Bangladesh, and their houses in Myanmar have been burned and vandalized and so on. Many people look at this situation and, you know, it's not a good situation. The Rohingya people are being treated unfairly. They're being oppressed. But some people think in a kind of situation like this where some people are being treated unfairly, we have to get angry in order to point out that there's oppression going. So here too, I don't agree. Because, like I said before, when we're angry, we're not thinking clearly. We're siding with one part against the other party. In actual fact, both sides are suffering. Both the Buddhists who are acting this way and persecuting the Rohingya, and also the Rohingya people. Everybody's in a bad situation. So rather than get angry at the perpetrators of the harm, how about having compassion for everybody in the situation? Yeah. The Rohingyas are suffering from being persecuted. The Buddhists are suffering from anger and from creating a lot of bad karma. Everybody's suffering. Why get mad and make the situation worse? What about stepping back and having compassion? And compassion means that we want people to not suffer. Yeah. We want them to be able to abandon their suffering. Why not have compassion and work for a resolution to the situation that may satisfy some of the needs of the Buddhist and some of the needs of the Rohingya? Okay. Why not respond with compassion? Because anger doesn't do any good. Okay, does that make some sense to you? Now the question comes, how do we subdue our anger? Because we can't just sit there and say, I'm not going to get angry, I'm not going to get angry, or I'm not angry, I'm not angry, when we are. Okay? So when we're angry, we have to own it. And we have to be able to say to ourselves, I'm angry. Usually when we're angry, we don't acknowledge to ourselves, I'm angry. What we say to ourselves is, I'm right. Okay? When you're angry, do you think you're right? You bet. When we're angry, we never think we're wrong. Yeah. We think we're right. So we say, I'm not angry, I'm right. And the solution to this problem is very simple. I'm right, you're wrong, you change. How does that go over? Okay, you're having a quarrel with a family member over some stupid thing. There's so many of our quarrels with family members over stupid things. Okay, so you're having a quarrel. If you look at your family member and say, I'm right and you're wrong, and you're wrong, and you need to change, what's the person going to say? Forget it. You're wrong, and I'm right, and you need to change. And then both of us dig in our heels, because if we're right, we are going to win this argument. We are not going to back down. So we fight and we argue. And if you ever had it happen in the middle of an argument, you realize that actually you're wrong. Have you ever had that happen? That actually, ooh, yeah, I did say that, I did do that. It wasn't very good. Even when we're wrong, we continue to fight, insisting that we're right, because we're too proud to acknowledge that we're wrong. Or we're fighting and we're wrong. We realize we're wrong, but again, we're not going to admit it. So we just turn around and walk away. Okay? Inside, we are furious. We go to our room, we sit down. When I was in college,
I had to work on a psychological research project to earn some money to pay my college fees. And I had to test people according, you know, their reflexes and how well they saw things and reacted to things. And sometimes the machine used to test these subjects didn't work. So I learned to kick it. And then the machine would work again. So you be careful. I might just kick you. But if I do, you will hurt my foot more than I hurt you. I'm sure. So we get so mad at somebody, but we don't want to admit that we're wrong. So we, instead of insisting, we're wrong, we turn our back, we go back to our room, and we have what I call a pity party. That is, we feel sorry for ourselves. Sometimes when you're angry, do you just sit there and feel sorry for yourself because people don't understand you? Oh, I try so hard to be a good family member, to make my family happy, and now they blame me for all this stuff that I didn't do, and they don't appreciate me. And then we want that family member we were quarreling with to come in the room and say, oh, are you upset? As if they cared about us. And then we could go, no. Okay, so we do a whole drama when we're angry, and it doesn't solve the problem at all. Okay, so here are a few antidotes. I think on the table we have. Yeah, do we have it? Oh, they're all finished. But you can go on Amazon. You can go on Amazon and look up Working with Anger and order a copy of it. And it has many, many, many antidotes for anger. Ways to look at a situation so that you just don't get angry to start with. And the key to practicing this is to think about these antidotes in your morning, in your daily meditation, when you're not in a difficult situation, when you're not angry, and you think of something in the past, a situation in the past where you got angry, and then you try thinking in some of these new ways so that you get familiar with them. And then when you're very familiar, if a situation happens in which you would normally get angry, then you can remember to change the way you're thinking. Okay? So what I'll tell you some of the ways that I find very helpful. There's many different ways to handle anger. So some of the ones that work for me may not work for you, and some of the other ones in the book may work for you, okay? So one thing that I find very helpful when I'm angry is to step back and look at the other person
and think, this person is unhappy. Yeah. And this person is saying and doing whatever there is that I find objectionable because they're unhappy. It's not that they're a bad person. Nobody is a bad person because we all have the potential to become a Buddha. So there's no such thing as a bad person or an evil person. And we can't just give somebody a label like that and sign off on them. Okay. Somebody who does something harmful is somebody who's unhappy, somebody who's suffering. When we see somebody who's suffering, shouldn't we have compassion for them? Okay. Somebody is harming me. They're talking about me behind my back at my job and ruining my reputation. Okay? If I think this person is unhappy and they think they're so confused when they're unhappy that they think that by talking behind my back and ruining my reputation, that will make them happy. But clearly, talking about somebody behind their back is not going to make you happy. Yeah. So that what the person is doing is not going to bring them happiness. They're only creating a ton of negative karma. Yeah. And they're going to suffer in the future because of that. And I don't wish anybody harm. I want them to be happy. I want them to be peaceful. So if I wish them to be happy and peaceful, then, and if they were happy and peaceful, then they would be doing what I find so objectionable. Because only unhappy people make other people suffer. Yeah. If you're happy, you don't make anybody suffer. You don't wake up in the morning and say, the sun is shining and the birds are chirping and I really appreciate all the goodness in my life. So I think I'm going to go blame somebody for something they didn't do and get angry and make them miserable. Yeah, nobody thinks like that. Okay, so this person's unhappy. I wish them well and imagine them being happy. Then, you know, that if they were happy, they wouldn't be doing that. So it's no sweat off my back to wish them happiness, rather than to retaliate and make them more miserable than they are. Because when they're more miserable, then they're going to do more unpleasant things to me. Okay, so that's one way to calm the mind so we're not so angry. To deal with the situation, we may have to, when our mind is calm, go and talk to the person and say, okay, I see that we aren't getting along. You know, what is your view on the situation? What are your feelings? What do you need? And then listen to them, and then share with them our feelings and our needs. And then see if we can come up with some kind of resolution that at least helps both of us. And what's amazing when you do this is many times when people are upset, if they know that you understand what they're feeling and what they're needing, automatically they calm down. Yeah? So, what's an example? Yeah. Somebody comes to me and says, I gave you a job to do, and you completely didn't do it. You disappointed me, you didn't do the, I gave you a task to do, you didn't do it, you just walked out and did your very own thing, and I'm really furious with you. Okay, so somebody says that to me. Now I know that if I say to them, I didn't do anything wrong, blah, 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 they're going to get mad and we're going to work. But if I say to them, gee, it sounds like you're really unhappy and you need reliability, then that person's going to go, yeah, I am unhappy and I do need to be with reliable people. Okay? So you may have to go back and forth in a conversation about that a few times. Say something similar to that each time. But when that person feels that you really understand that they're unhappy and that they need to be with reliable people, automatically they're going to relax. And then, if we actually weren't reliable and we did let them down, then we could say, I'm sorry. Yeah, I forgot all about it, and that's, something for me to remedy in the future. Or if they're accusing me falsely, I could say, I understand that you're unhappy and you need somebody to be reliable, but whatever the problem was, I thought that I did what you had asked. And help give them some more information so that they can see that, you weren't trying to harm them. Okay? So, and this works very, very well in family situations. And especially in couple situations. Because very often in a couple, if one person is unhappy, the other person starts giving them advice. Yeah? Have you ever been unhappy about something someone did, and then that person starts giving you advice? Don't feel unhappy about that. They didn't do anything. Just put it down. Forget about it. It's no big deal. And you feel really hurt, and someone starts giving you the advice about just forget about it. Does that help you? No. You feel really hurt. Whereas if the person says, oh, it seems like you're feeling hurt. Do you need understanding? Then automatically you go, yeah, that's exactly what's happening with me. I'm hurt and I need understanding. And then they calm down. Whereas when we give them advice, it makes them feel like they haven't been understood at all. And often,
is to know that somebody understands what they're thinking about and how they're feeling.
Sometimes we may not actually know what somebody is feeling or what they're needing, and we may have to ask. And when they tell us, we have to listen and not interrupt. Because often when people are telling us how they're feeling, what they're needing, then we interrupt them and say, why are you feeling like that? That's stupid. That gonna help the situation? No. Sometimes we just need to say, yeah, what's going on with you? Because we really don't understand. Let me give you an example from my family. Okay? When I was a teenager, I would go out with my friends, and my parents would always tell a certain time that I had to be home. And I knew that if I wasn't home by that time, which was earlier than all my friends had to be home, I knew that if I wasn't home, my mother would worry that I had been in a car accident, or I had been kidnapped, or my mother could worry like nobody could worry. And she would invent some horrible situation and call the police and report me as a missing person if I were 5 minutes late after my curfew. Okay, so I did not like this very much because I was a teenager and I was going with my friends and I knew how to take care of myself. And I got really mad at my mother for worrying so much and for giving me such an early curfew when all my friends could stay out later. My mother was mad at me because, you know, I didn't want to listen to her. So, actually, we were arguing about two different things. What we were concerned about was different. What was my mother's concern? What did she want?
Safety.
She wanted her daughter to be safe. Did I understand that? No. What was my concern? I wanted to be independent and make my own choices and not be bossed around. Okay, so I was arguing for independence. She was arguing for safety. And neither of us understood what the other one was arguing about.
So we were going like this.
It took me years, it wasn't until I was in my 20s, that I finally understood what my mother's concern was and what she needed. Whereas if we had bothered at that time to have a conversation, you know, like if my mom had said to me, you know, what is it that you need? I would have said, I need your trust that I could make some right decisions because I need my independence. And then she might have gone, okay, I'm not so sure if I can trust you 100%, excuse me, but I'll trust you more. And if I had asked my
mother, what's your concern?
And she said, your safety. I could have responded with, I will try to be safe. And you've taught me many things as I was growing up about how to be safe and examine situations so I don't get myself into problems. And that might have relaxed my mother. Okay. But we didn't say that to each other. We just quarreled. Okay? So really stopping sometime and asking someone, what is it that you're needing? What is your concern? Yeah. That may really help us understand what's going on. And then often we can meet their concern without too much trouble. Okay? So, I've talked a bit now. What I want to do is open it, and you can ask some questions or make comments so we can have a little bit more of a dialogue.
And I'm studying. Can we determine the source of I and mine? If we can find out where are they coming from, then we can solve the problem.
Yes.
If we will be missing all these problems, if we can determine the source of I.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. If we can see the wrong grasping at I and mine and overcome that ignorance, then these problems are solved. Yeah, exactly. That's why the Buddha said that the ignorance and the mind that grasps at I and mine is the source of our cycling in samsara and cycling. But it's very difficult to generate the wisdom that erases the ignorance. So in the meantime, we need to practice other techniques that are easier for us, like some of the things that I was saying tonight. And then as we become more knowledgeable in the Dharma and can think clearer, then we can start to generate the wisdom that knows selflessness. Other questions?
Hello. Honorable Tashidari. You're talking like the topics in samsara, and nibbana, nirvana, and Buddha nature. Okay. So I would like to ask Honorable, the Vajrayana schools, they believe in antara bhava.
Yeah.
Antara bhava. You know what's antara bhava? Antara bhava. Can like a soul?
What?
No. Are you saying a Sanskrit term?
Sanskrit is not antara bhava. Sanskrit term. Samsara. Something like a Tomiksen. Tomiksen.
Bardo.
Bardo. Okay. They believe in Vajra school. They believe. Yes, antara bhava.
Okay, but there's this
reborn.
Yes.
Rebirth.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. Now, can you explain more in detail about this when you call the antara bhava? Okay. I don't understand.
The bardo state between one life and the next life.
Reborn.
Rebirth.
Rebirth.
Okay, so not the bardo.
tradition, they believe that there is Antara power before or during the Antara
power. Any meaning explanation about the value of the link in the Vajrayana's book?
Yeah.
Okay, so this, the Bardo means that when we die from this life, we may immediately take rebirth in another body, but sometimes there is a space called an intermediate state between this life and when we're reborn in the next body. So at that time, our consciousness has a very subtle body, yeah, and it can be a rather confusing state for ordinary beings. But then when the karma ripens for that bardo being to take rebirth, for example, in the fertilized egg, you know, of a human being, then they are attracted to that body and they take rebirth there.
Hello,
Buddha progress non-self. Anatta.
Yes.
Non-self.
Right.
Who is in the rebirth?
Who's taking the rebirth? The mere, the merely designated I. There is no findable I or self that takes rebirth.
Who is in the rebirth?
I just responded, what did I say? Repeat what I said. Yeah, the I that exists by being merely designated. There is no findable I. Okay? We believe in selflessness. We believe in emptiness. There is no soul. There is no permanent, unitary, independent person. Okay? But on the conventional level, we say the person is reborn. So on the conventional level, there exists a merely designated I. Because we say the person is reborn, even though when we analyze, we cannot find the person who is reborn. Okay? It's a bit difficult to understand. Okay? Okay. Other questions?
In Roma, considering asking this question again, what mana? What
mana? You are talking about mana.
What mana? And what is nirvana?
What is nirvana? Okay. The Pali tradition and the Sanskrit tradition have some similar ideas about what is nirvana and also some different ideas. Okay? So nirvana is the cessation of dukkha and the cause of dukkha. Okay? So nirvana is the third of the four truths, true cessation. Okay? Nirvana, from the Pali side, is the ultimate nature. Yeah. And so when you have a vision, when you clearly see the ultimate nature, you become a stream enter, so nirvana, and so on. In the Sanskrit tradition, nirvana is also the cessation of dukkha and the cause of dukkha. Okay? And we talk about different kinds of nirvana. Yeah. So, and some of these are spoken about in the Pali tradition,
and some of them aren't. So one is nirvana with remainder. And so that's when Arhat has attained nirvana. But they're still alive in that birth in which they attained nirvana. So the remainder, they have nirvana, but the remainder is their polluted aggregates. When they pass away, they shed the polluted aggregates, and they have nirvana without remainder. Okay? In the Sanskrit tradition, we explain nirvana with and without remainder that way, but there's also another way that we explain it, which is a little bit difficult, so I'm just going to skip that temporarily. We also talk about what's called non-abiding nirvana. And so this is the nirvana of a fully awakened being who doesn't abide in samsara and also doesn't abide in arhatship, but has also removed all the subtlest stains on the mind and has become a fully awakened Buddha. So not abiding nirvana is Buddhahood. Okay? Yeah, in the Pali tradition, and in the Sanskrit tradition, we say the Buddha was also a Arhat. Yeah. But in the Sanskrit tradition, we make a difference between an Arhat and a fully awakened Buddha.
Thank you.
Is there someone else? I have a question. About this anger, we should be thankful of our anger towards those who are close with us. We are familiar with like our parents, children, spouses, and siblings, those who we are closely linked to. So, why does that happen and how to avoid this?
Okay, so it's very true. I think people say the meanest, most horrible things to the people they love the most. That true or not true? Would you ever say to a stranger what you say to the people you love when you're angry? We never would. We're too polite with strangers, even if we were mad at them. But family members, bleh. Yeah. We just vomit our anger all over them. Okay? Why? It's because we're attached to them. The more attached we are to someone or something, the more upset we get. The more attached we are to someone or something, the more upset we get when they don't do what we want. Okay. We have a mind that is very self-centered. Okay? We have two big problems. One is we're quite self-centered. The other is we have a totally wrong idea of who we are. Both of these contribute to getting angry. When the grasping at an I, like you said, is the source of the attachment, is the source of the anger. Okay? So that's one factor. The other factor is that we are attached. That grasping that I and mine has given rise to attachment. The stronger the attachment, the stronger the anger is going to be. Now, because attachment exaggerates the good qualities of someone or something. And we think that because
or object has happiness in it, we've got to get it. Okay? So I want to be with this person because they make me happy. Again, it's not really that somebody else makes me happy. It's that I allow myself to be satisfied instead of discontent and complaining. Okay. But when somebody doesn't do what we want them to do, then they're interfering with our happiness. And so here's what I call rules of the universe. So each of us has, based on our own self-centered mind, rules of the universe about how life should be and how the universe and everybody and everything in us should treat us. Okay? So I'll tell you some of my rules of the universe, my universe. And you can think if there are also the rules of your universe, and you may have some other rules that I'm not mentioning. Okay. So my rules of the universe, first is everything has to happen the way I want it to happen. Okay? If that's a rule of my universe, I'm setting myself up for a lot of stuff. Because no way is everything going to happen the way I want it to happen. But I hold on to my rules of the universe. And when things don't happen my way, I get upset. And I let you know I'm upset. Okay? Second rule of the universe. Everybody has to like. No one can dislike me. Everybody has to like me. Third, everybody has to praise me. No one can criticize me. Okay? Fourth, everything I want, I should have. Okay. It goes on from here. So these are ideas that I hold in my mind very tightly because of my self-grasping and because of my self-centeredness. The stronger I am attached to these kinds of things, the stronger I make my rules of the universe, the angrier and more upset or unhappy I'm going to get when the world does not do what I want it to do. Of course, the whole problem is me, isn't it? Yeah. The whole problem is me. I'm the one who makes up these ridiculous rules of the universe because I'm quite attached to myself. So if I want to be happy, I need to drop these rules of the universe. Okay? That answer your question?
Thank you very much.
Okay. We have time for one more question. Okay. He had another question. The cause of samsara? I think you know all these things. I think you're just testing me. Yeah? Really? I think you know. Don't you think he knows? The way he's asking these questions, he knows the answer. He wants to see if I know the answer. Because he's not quite sure if people who from who practice Tibetan Buddhism have the right view or not. Anyway, I'll answer your question. What's the cause of samsara? Ignorance. Yeah. Karma comes from ignorance. First comes ignorance, then comes afflictions, then comes polluted karma. And from that, rebirth comes. Okay. So let's sit quietly for a minute and think about what you heard so that you can take it home and practice it. So you've got to practice it. Just hearing the talk about how to work with anger is not going to cure your anger. You have to think about it and practice changing the way you think. Okay, so we'll do this for a minute and then we'll dedicate the area. Let's rejoice that way. We're able to spend the evening together thinking about something useful that we're able to really try and transform our mind and overcome the anger that keeps us imprisoned. So let's rejoice at our own merit and at the merit of everybody here, and at the merit that we created as a group as well. And then let's dedicate all that merit so that the Buddha's teachings can exist in a pure form forever, so that all living beings can attain full awakening. And so that all Buddhist traditions and practitioners can abide in harmony with each other. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Guru Buddha, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious